As 15,000 more troops are deployed to Afghanistan by the United States, a former counterinsurgency advisor to the Canadian forces in Afghanistan says the war is unwinnable and was lost from the start. At the same time, Professor Thomas Johnson says if international forces left Afghanistan tomorrow, the Afghan government would likely fall within days and its ineffectual security forces shortly after that. So strong is the hold of the Taliban across an estimated 70% of the country's 410 districts. The situation raises doubts about the wisdom of Australia's decision to send 26,000 Australian soldiers to Afghanistan between 2001 and 2014, leaving 41 dead and many more wounded, with the task of training Afghanistan's security forces. In his new book, Taliban Narratives, Thomas Johnson says it's a case of victory to the side that's told the more appealing story, and that is, he says, the Taliban. Professor Johnson, who's been travelling to Afghanistan for decades, spoke to me from Monterey, where he's Research Professor of National Security Affairs at the US Naval Postgraduate School. Thomas Johnson, thank you very much for joining PM. You've spent decades travelling to Afghanistan. After 16 years of Western military efforts there, aid operations, going into a 17th, is it still worth it? Can this be won?
No, I think the war is unwinnable, and for a wide variety of reasons. And I think that the Pentagon knows this. Last November, in the New York Times, they published an article that suggested that all casualty rates for the Afghan National Defense and Security Forces would be classified. And recently, the Special Inspector General for Afghan Aid and Reconstruction presented their quarterly report to Congress here in the United States. And not only were casualty figures classified, they could not get them, but they also could not get the actual percentage of districts that were either leaning towards or were under the control of the Taliban. The BBC later put out a note that suggested about 70%, and they put out an article that suggested about 70% of the districts, the 410 districts in Afghanistan, are either leaning towards the Taliban or are controlled by the Taliban. So it's an extremely bleak situation. And the last thing I'll say is that, you know, the United States is spent $1 billion or near $1 trillion in Afghanistan. And 17 years later, Americans can't even convoy in the capital city. Americans coming into Afghanistan have to take helicopter rides from the international airport to the embassy. Now, some military convoys do traverse the city, but that's the exception rather than the rule. So every indicator suggests that this is an unwinnable war militarily. The only solution to this is a political solution.
We'll talk about political solutions in a moment, but your book, Taliban Narratives, talks about how the Taliban has managed to convince such a substantial amount of the population to go along with them. Can you just, you know, in a nutshell, tell us how they've been so successful with that messaging?
Well, before I talk about the messaging, let me real briefly suggest that, you know, if you take a look at intrastate conflicts since World War II, be they insurgencies, be they civil wars, be they wars of national liberations, most of these wars, conflicts, have been wars of narratives. So the story that basically the actor that has the best story and narrative usually wins. And the Taliban has recognized this from day one. And as Mao suggested, an insurgent is like a fish swimming in water, with the metaphor, of course, the insurgent being the fish and the water being the people. And the Taliban came up with a wide variety, well, actually a limited number of narratives supported by some very strong stories that resonate with the rural Afghan population. Their narratives and their stories are particularly aimed at the rural population, which I would argue is the real center of gravity, and not towards the urban population. But I can speak to some of the specific narratives, and they also have very Afghan delivery systems that are unique and quite brilliant. My bottom line position of my book is that we lost the war of the story in Afghanistan. And with that being lost, we basically lost the war.
So go into a little bit more detail, if you would. I mean, it's interesting to contemplate their systems of delivery, but just in terms of the actual stories, what are they appealing to that really gets into the hearts and minds of those rural Pashtun people?
Well, they appeal to a number of things. They appeal to justice. They appeal to collective memory. They appeal to nationalism. They appeal to victimization. They appeal. One of their major narratives deal obviously with Islam and Sharia law and jihad. And they have a wide variety of stories that support all of these. They also focus on the Afghan way of life, pride and honor. Many of the messages deal with. That are aimed at the Pashtun deal with the code of the Pashtun known as Pashtun Wali. They not only have these narratives and stories, but they also, because they're involved at the local level in the South, most Taliban foot soldiers don't operate more than 5 to 10 miles away from their home village. They know the local politics. So their messaging doesn't only have a general message, it also is specifically targeted towards the particular locale they're dealing with. And it's extremely effective.
I think anybody who looked even half closely at Afghanistan from the beginning of this conflict and with any kind of even cursory knowledge of what had gone before might have guessed, or might have had a feeling in their bones that this was the case, that there would be local narratives, local strains of storytelling, appeals to ideas of tradition that might be at work here. Did the American military and body politic in particular really not ever understand that?
I believe that you're correct. I think that the Taliban's regime fell so quickly. We became very arrogant and we became extremely lazy. And we never tried to understand the cultural nuances, the societal nuances, the tribal nuances in the Pashtun hinterlands. And we just got lazy. So, while many of us that were advising the military early on were constantly talking about, you know, you need to appeal to the locals, it was just the words fell on deaf ears. Let me give you a real fast story. In 2009, I gave a keynote speech to most of the deputies and principals that were involved on the military side in information operations and psychological operations. And after I gave my talk, I asked the crowd, I said, now I have a question to ask you. What are the three themes that you're going to project this year, in battling the Taliban? And the room went silent. Now, remember, these are the people that are involved in IO and PSYOP, and the room went silent. And I knew then, I had been writing a number of years before, starting in 2006, that we were in very bad shape. But I knew in 2009, basically the war was lost. Because again, this was you peel away the onion, this was basically a war of stories, a war of narratives, and we just had nothing. And you can't occupy at that time a country for 8 years if you don't have a good story as why you're in the country. Steve Cole, 2 weekends ago in the New York Times, wrote a brilliant, of course, Steve Cole wrote the great book, Ghost Wars, and he has a new book that was Afghanistan pre-9/11, has a new book coming out shortly called Directorate Z. But he wrote a brilliant op-ed piece in the New York Times that basically suggested that the reason that things haven't gone well in Afghanistan is we don't know why we're there. And I completely agree with those sentiments.
So the US president has now committed the United States to remaining in Afghanistan, a mini surge, some people are calling it, 15,000 more soldiers. What is the story? I mean, why is America still there? What is the president saying he wants to achieve by this?
Well, the cynical Tom Johnson would say that this mini surge is President Trump put this mini surge in basically so he doesn't that Afghanistan's not lost under his watch. That's the cynical Tom Johnson. But 15,000 troops are surely not going to be able to do what 150. 2,000 NATO troops couldn't do over a number of years. There's no way to win this war militarily. So putting in special forces and, you know, we say, hey, we're going to do more training. Well, we've been training the Afghan National Security Forces now for, you know, close to 15, 16 years. And there's very few units that can operate independently. They have terrible command and control, terrible logistics. Now, their special forces are pretty good, but, you know, all these will go away, I believe, if the internationals ever left.
And what would happen if the internationals left? I mean, Ashraf Ghani, the president, recently said that would lead to the collapse of the government and the Afghan forces in a few months. Is that what you'd expect?
Well, he said 6 months. I think he's being optimistic. I think that that's why we're between a rock and a hard place. I think if the internationals left at noon, the Ghani government might be over within 48 hours, in 2 days. And I think the security services might be gone within a week or two. We saw similar events happen in Vietnam, which also was a war of narratives in many respects. And remember, the South Vietnamese had a very large military, very professional air force, and nothing like that exists with the Afghans. So, yeah, I'm fairly pessimistic where this is going to go if we can't find some type of political solution and some type of reconciliation
Taliban. Sorry to interrupt. And is that possible? Talking has been ruled out by President Trump, but plenty of others have been talking about how to talk. Is it likely that negotiations could happen?
Well, and I've recently had debates with some leading Afghan scholars about this, but Mullah Omar said very early on, and you know, his after he died, his follower Mullah Mansour said the very same thing, and the head of the Taliban, Mullah Akhundzada, has said the same thing too, that the Taliban will never sincerely negotiate until internationals leave. So again, it really is between a rock and a hard place. If we leave, the government and probably the military is going to go away quickly, and there could be a bloodbath. But the Taliban have been very consistent over the last 15 years and suggesting that they will never have sincere negotiations until the foreigners leave. And I believe them. You know, we hear about these peace talks going on and off all of the time, but they never result to anything. I think and most of the times they aren't even represented by Taliban that can speak for the organization as a whole. So it's a very bleak situation.
And of course, there's a whole regional and international dynamic that we don't have time to talk about, but clearly that's even more complicating. Thomas Johnson, Thomas Johnson, thank you very much for joining PM today.
Well, it's been my distinct pleasure. Thank you for having me.